In his New York Times review of Mary Gordon's 2005 novel Pearl, John Leonard wrote, "Mary Gordon thinks out loud about mothers, daughters, atonement and forgiveness, about music, art, sainthood and terrorism, about martyrdom and Irish politics, genocide in Europe and Cambodia, suicide and human sacrifice, about scorn, butter, hunger, greed, cloisters and surveillance, Virgil and Aquinas, Eliot and Yeats, Hecuba and Isis, Anne Frank and Joan of Arc." Well, that's quite a list for a story that begins on Christmas night when Maria Meyer learns that her 20-year-old daughter Pearl has chained herself on a hunger strike to a flagpole in front of the U.S. Embassy in Dublin. Pearl is the Leonard Lopate Show Book Club September selection. The paperback edition is published by Anchor Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mary Gordon back to our show.
Hello. Delightful, as always. Thank you.
And we hope that our listeners who've been reading the book along with us we'll join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. Also, join in on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And a listener has already written in. Sel from New Jersey left this question on our show page. Family of origin in both Pearl and Final Payments, scholarly widower father, brilliant daughter, and hateful housekeeper. Does the author have any comments about that configuration?
I didn't even realize it. Wow, you caught me. No, I never even realized it. That's terrific. My unconscious has been working overtime. I guess the scholarly widowed father is a sort of romance. I probably would have preferred to have a scholarly widowed father. I didn't. You know, it's kind of the father-daughter romance played out in the life of the mind that it's very compelling to me.
Mm. Although this is also about mother-daughter relationships,
yes,
as have many of your writings been. You published this novel in 2005, but it's set in 1998. What got you interested in writing about Ireland and the Troubles and the peace process in a novel?
Well, one of the larger human questions that compels me is bloodlust and the romance of violence. Why is it that particularly men, particularly young men, are attracted to violence? And it seems so much more compelling to them than peace. And I had a very great friend who's an Irish priest who was very involved in the peace process. Actually, he actually talked a hunger striker down, and he knew of a young man, the son of very upper middle class parents, who was the kind of family loser. And he had a romance about the glory days of the IRA, the hunger striking days, the Bobby Sands days. And in the 90s, he put a bomb on a golf course. It blew up, did some damage.
Obviously not symbolic.
Yes.
Because you don't have much damage if you do it on a golf course, except leave a bunch of divots.
Well, those divots have a big lobby. And he was, of course, put in jail. But he wanted to be part of the violent glory days. So I was very interested in that. I've also always been interested in the figure of Antigone, the young woman who searches for purity and is willing to actually sacrifice herself for an ideal.
Well, you bring in a lot of different themes, or at least our listeners pick them up. Linda left this question on our show page. I'm halfway through, and suddenly it dawns on me, Maria and Joseph, Mary and Joseph, with the child laying down her life as a statement about the universal will to harm. Of course, an allegory. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
That's a good reader.
Yes.
So, but you're also dealing not just with the IRA, but with the conflict within the IRA, because there are two IRAs at this point. One that calls itself the real IRA,
that's
which
right.
is the breakoff group.
Yes, and they were the ones that were responsible for the Alma bombing in the shopping mall that killed people. They consider people like Gerry Adams absolute traitors to the cause. They don't want a political solution. They are interested in continuing violence, and they have just contempt for the people who have tried to make a political solution.
Now, Pearl has gone to Ireland to study language. How did she get caught up in the struggle for Irish independence or Northern Irish independence?
Well, she gets caught up in the struggle kind of by accident. She meets a boy who is kind of a loser. And she's one of the, first of all, she's lonely. One of the things that I think is interesting is when you're traveling, you often will make odd connections just because you're lonely. This boy is brilliant. He's angry. He's a loser. She's compelled by him for a variety of reasons. And he is one of those loser boys who has a romance of the IRA. Mm-hmm. So it's through a boyfriend.
And is this a cautionary tale for parents who send their impressionable children off to foreign studies?
No, there's no way of keeping your children safe. The cautionary tale is you have no control, so just give it up. You might as well let them go do what they want because you can't control it. I mean, nobody, you would have thought that was the safest thing in the world, to send your daughter to Ireland to study language. Who knows?
A major theme in this book is martyrdom. Why is the idea of self-sacrifice so powerful to these characters you're writing about?
Well, the etymological root of martyr is witness. And one of the things that I think is fascinating is the question, if there's nothing that you would die for, what is it that you live for? And the ultimate sacrifice of putting your life on the line as a sort of witness is something that fascinates me, because it is using the power of violence toward yourself rather than to someone else and making the ultimate sacrifice.
Pearl's mother, Maria, is a Catholic, and she thinks a lot about the saints who are martyrs. And I guess Catholics probably think more about that because the religion contains saints. There are some other religions that have saints, but saints are a major factor in Catholic theology.
Yes, and I was obsessed with Lives of the Saints. And even when in the 50s, during the Cold War, we were supposed to pray to be martyrs. We were supposed to pray that if the communists came, put a gun to our heads and say you don't believe in Jesus, that we would say, shoot me. And that would have been the best possible death. You were supposed to pray for that. This is, you know, when Elvis Presley is doing Blue Suede Shoes. This is what we were praying for.
Are you surprised at all by the desire for martyrdom these days among young Muslims?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Are we talking about the same kind of idealism gone awry?
Yes, absolutely. Now, what they do that I'm not completely comfortable with is they take other people with them.
But so did the IRA.
Yeah, the IRA were not saints. Mm-hmm. But the saints and Pearl only inflict violence on themselves. But I think that the commitment unto death is a very compelling idea, particularly to young people.
My guest is Mary Gordon. We're talking about her 2005 novel, Pearl, which is this month's feature in the Leonard Lopate Show Book Club. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Why does Pearl feel guilty?
She feels guilty because something that she said in anger to a young mentally disabled boy, she feels resulted in his death. And she feels that it was a cruelty, a darkness in herself that she hadn't been aware of that caused a death that she wants to atone for.
But the death, of course, is really caused by the troubles, isn't it?
Well, the death is actually caused by an accident. The death is again, this was a young boy who wanted to get the approval of his father, who was not married to his mother, who put a bomb, or it failed. It doesn't work out because he doesn't quite do it right. But he actually is hit by a car because he's partially deaf. So it was, in a way, an accident, but Pearl feels he was depressed because of what she said to him, And the question is, was it an accident or was it caused by the larger forces?
We will continue our conversation with Mary Gordon, talking about Pearl, which is this month's selection of the Leonard Lopecho Book Club. It is published now in paperback by Anchor Books. We will continue after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Mary Gordon, who, how many books have you written altogether, Mary?
17.
17 books, and that is fiction, nonfiction, memoir, poetry?
Well, I've written poetry, but I haven't published it. Biography, criticism.
And does it all come together in a book like this because you deal with so many different themes?
You know, I actually think I'm always writing about the same thing over and over again. The relationship of the past to the present, the struggle to live a moral life in the larger sense and the more private sense, the relationship between family and other sorts of choices and way of being in the world. I think I'm always writing about the same thing all the time.
I mentioned Joseph, who Maria grew up with. He's her closest friend. And in many ways, he's like a father to Pearl, who never knew her real father. Was Pearl's real father a martyr in some way?
Yes, he was. He was a Cambodian who made very courageous political choices.
At one point, Joseph becomes convinced that his father, who he never knew, is actually Ivan the Terrible, a former Nazi guard who was discovered living in Chicago. Why does he fixate on that?
His mother is sort of horrible. And he has just an anxiety that too many details came together and he has to face the most terrible thing because he thinks not to face it would be a sort of cowardice. So he sort of makes himself do it.
But we're talking about a number of people who grow up without not knowing your father or your mother. Does that leave a hole in people sometimes?
You know, I think it certainly leaves a hole where a lot of fantasy can breed. I would think that would be inevitable.
Who's telling this story? It's an omniscient narrator who also seems to have a personality.
I got the idea from a book that I love a lot, E.M. Forster's Howard's End. So whoever the narrator of Howard's End is, that's the narrator of Pearl.
Mm.
Maybe it's E.M. Forster.
That's because you can have this omniscient narrator who is totally impersonal, but if you give that person some kind of a personality, it allows us to connect more to the whole story, doesn't it?
Yes, and there was a way in which, interestingly, I chose that narrator rather late in the composition of the book because I began the book in 1997. After 9/11, the whole idea of martyrdom was a completely different ballgame. And I felt I had to have a narrator acknowledging that somehow this was going to be a difficult thing and to kind of cut the reader's objections off at the pass.
Were you also thinking in 2005 of something that seemed to be more and more apparent, that there's often a parallel and connection between religious conviction and political activism?
Yes, because it's, for whatever reason and despite the differences, it's a desire to be part of something larger than yourself. Now, that can lead to a lot of errors, but without it, you know, we're all just looking at our iPads and, you know, trying to figure out what's the next shade of nail polish. And so that strong spice of a desire to live a life larger than yourself can lead to great good and great evil.
You obviously had to do a lot of research for this book, but what about Ireland and Rome? You always have a lot of things set in Rome. Is that research or is that just you using your personal pleasure experiences in the fiction
as
well?
It's a really good way of getting a tax write-off.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was asking.
I adore Rome. For some reason, that's my great good place, and I just go and I become more alive, and so the writing comes from that. I think it creates a porosity in me that I can't explain.
Well, you mentioned Forster, and he traveled a lot, and his travels inspired his work. Does the same sort of thing happen for you?
Yes, it does. And And now I'm actually writing about Spain and the Spanish Civil War, so I'm now traveling to Spain rather a lot.
Now, I mentioned voice. I've always been curious about how writers come to the voice that they wind up writing something in. Did you start off with this voice?
No. I started out with three first-person narratives, Maria's, Joseph's, and then Pearl's. And that became kind of unwieldy. They were repeating themselves. And again, with 9/11, I realized I had to have a narrator who was doing some interpretation. So it was quite far in before I changed voices.
Well, sometimes writers like the repeating themselves. It gives a Rashomon feel to a story, but you weren't interested in that here.
No, I thought it would be a little bit boring, or people would say, I've heard that, move on.
Your most recent work, The Liar's Wife, a group of novellas, was published this summer. This is far from being a novella. You couldn't have put all of the different concerns here into a novella.
Yes, exactly.
But you could have broken it up into four novellas?
I guess I could have, but what one doesn't do in a novella that one does in a novel is to create a larger world. And that was something I was interested in doing. The other thing that I really wanted to talk about in this book was, you know, I'm the generation of the 60s. What happened to our political faith? We really thought we could change the world.
People thought rock and roll was going to change the world.
I know.
The world changed rock and roll.
It was either drugs, sex, everything got changed. But what happened to our faith? And realizing that this generation of young people cannot possibly have the political faith that we had. And I'm very interested in that loss. It is a real loss of faith.
Well, they are the children of the people who had that faith. That isn't transmitted from parent to child?
No, because I think they saw that everything that we thought was going to change really didn't. And I just think the world in general has become privatized. People don't believe in public solutions. They don't believe in public life. And we did. And so I think they thought we were naive on the whole.
Pearl deals with so many different ideas. Do you know going in which ideas you want to deal with, or do they just occur as the characters wind up doing something that surprises you?
Well, I had three...
anorexia, for example, is another theme here.
Yeah, I had three Post-its on the wall above my desk, and it said coarseness, fatigue, harm. And my daughter, who was a teenager, wrote a note on my desk after that and said, having a bad day, Mom. And those were the three things I wanted to deal with. I also wanted to deal with anorexia as a sort of odd version of the desire for purity and the desire for control, a kind of odd, destructive Antigone complex that you want to be completely pure. And I think that because particularly young women don't feel that they have much sway in the outer world and they can't be religious in the old ways, they turn this impulse for purity on themselves. Now, in a way, martyrs, particularly women martyrs, always have. Carolyn Bynum Walker has a wonderful book, Holy Feast, Holy Fast. But I was interested in this desire for purity and how it expresses itself in literal bodily terms with anorexia.
We have very little time, but it's been 10 years since you wrote this book. When you look at it now, do you think, well, I still stand by everything in it?
I do, yeah. Maybe if I were more complicated, I would be a revisionist.
Well, maybe it's a very good book.
I hope so.
And it's Pearl, now available in paperback from Anchor Books, the featured novel on this month's Leonard Lopate Show book club. And my great thanks to Mary Gordon for coming by to talk about it.
Thanks so much.